request being glad.
Thank you. Mr. Robertson, please introduce the last item of the day.
Item 17 focuses on nutrient removal using a wood chip bioreactor. The City of Santa Maria uses a State Water Board grant fund to construct a wood chip bioreactor that treats runoff from over 5,000 acres of ag land near the city. Shannon Sweeney of the city and alumni of the Water Board, right?
Yes.
Is here to discuss the project in detail.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the board, staff, and the public. My name is Shannon Sweeney, and I'm the Water Resources Manager for the City of Santa Maria, and I am very honored today to be able to share with you the construction of the Jim May Park biofilter, along with the integrated plan concept and how the two relate with each other. And as the Water Resources Manager for the City of Santa Maria, a large part of my job is to make sure that we have safe drinking water supply for the community of Santa Maria, which is a disadvantaged community of over 100,000 people. I'm going to start by sharing with you the integrated plan concept, then fold into the GMA Park biofilter, and then circle back around to how that relates to the integrated plan. I welcome comments at any time, or comments or questions at any time during this presentation. All right, first I want to talk just a couple minutes about the integrated plan concept. The integrated plan concept is not a new concept. In fact, in the past, the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, has used a concept along the lines of the integrated plan in order to bring agencies who are out of regulatory compliance into compliance by looking at a holistic view of their system, basically prioritizing projects and establishing deadlines and monitoring and compliance points to bring the agency into compliance as efficiently as possible. And the EPA started to realize, well, why are we limiting this simply to agencies that are out of compliance? Why don't we consider this for other agencies as well? Because it's a great holistic way of looking at water quality. And so the EPA offered grants to various agencies, and the City of Santa Maria was one of those agencies that received a grant. So this concept is supported by the EPA as well as for the state. And the way to look at it is it's intended to address the myriad of different regulatory requirements that the city has, such as the MS4, the WDR for treatment plants, TMDLs and post-construction requirements, and to achieve other benefits as well by looking very holistically at the system. And what it does is it provides a single vehicle for identifying projects and timelines and compliance points in order to meet water quality. Now on to the Jim May Park biofilter, and I've given this presentation a couple of times, and I always say it's subtitled, How to Take a Peaceful Park Setting and Turn It into a Big Hole Full of Wood Chips, which is the before and after pictures of this project. But to fully understand how we came to this project, I need to share with you a little bit about the city's water supply as a backdrop. That's a preview of the presentation. There you go. All right, so the city demand is about 13,000 acre feet per year. And the City of Santa Maria has two water supplies. We have a state water and local groundwater supply. And we have the ability to take up to 16,200 acre feet of state water. And likewise, we can actually get all of our water from our local groundwater supply. So the question is, well, if we've got plenty of groundwater, why would we ever hook up to state water, which is actually quite expensive? We hooked up to state water in the 1990s because the city was struggling with high salts at its wastewater treatment plant because of the number of softeners being used in the city, because our local groundwater supply is quite hard. Now, state water is a wonderful supply. It's low in hardness, it's low in salts, low in other contaminants such as nitrate. But there's a challenge with state water in that the allocation varies each year depending on lots of factors that include things like how much it rains up north and how well the Delta smelter doing. And so the allocation can range. And in the 10 years that I've been working for the city, the allocation has ranged from 5% all the way up to 100%. We have 100% allocation. We're celebrating because I can meet all of our needs with state water. When we have a 5% year, I am not celebrating because that's a little over 800 acre feet. I need to make up the difference with our local supply. In addition to the variation in the allocation, state water goes down for 2 to 3 weeks every year for maintenance on the system. And during that time, I have no choice but to rely 100% on state water, on our local groundwater supply. Now, the local supply in Santa Maria is vast as far as quantity goes. I've heard numbers ranging anywhere from 2 to 4 million acre feet for the Santa Maria groundwater supply. And so it's quite big, and it gets fed by Twitchell recharge. And so from a quantity standpoint, it's a thing of beauty. From a quality standpoint, there are some challenges with it. One thing to know about that aquifer is that it's got kind of a shallow aquifer and a deep aquifer, and they're not really separated from each other, so that deep aquifer is not confined. And the shallow aquifer is quite contaminated with nitrate, and the deeper aquifer is not. And so what I've done here is I've presented a slide that shows if I were to run all the water from the 7 city production wells, what the nitrate concentration would be. And the maximum contaminant level for nitrate as nitrate is 45 milligrams per liter. And you can see in 2009, I'm losing sleep during the state water shutdown. Because if we had to use every groundwater well to meet the needs during that time, I would be at the maximum contaminant level for nitrate. In 2009, we started looking at what it would take to do wellhead treatment. Wellhead treatment to remove both hardness and nitrate would involve either reverse osmosis or electrodialysis reversal. And it's actually not hard to do, and you can do it modular, and it wouldn't be that expensive. But what got super expensive is what to do with the brine that's left over. We looked at 16 different ways to get rid of that brine, including things like zero liquid discharge or trucking the brine or putting it down old oil wells. And what we came up with is it would cost us about $64 million to provide wellhead treatment. We're a disadvantaged community. I checked my pockets. I checked the pockets of lots of other people, and we did not have $64 million. But it's nice to know what it would cost if we were to have to do something along those lines. So meanwhile, I got to look at some more short-term solutions. Are there something, short-term solutions I can do? And you can see here in 2010, I added a packer in well 14. Well 14 is our largest production well, and it was showing us really high nitrate numbers. Here's a graph that shows our nitrate numbers from our largest production well, which show nitrate almost twice the drinking water limit. And a packer is kind of like a fancy bicycle tire that you put in the well, and what you can do is you can block off the screens on one side or the other of the packer. What we did was we put the packer in at 440 feet, dropped the pump to below the packer, so we blocked off the shallow aquifer, and lo and behold, look at the amazingly beautiful nitrate numbers that we saw out of this well once we put the packer in. So, solution? Oh, sure, short time. But what happens over time when we pump from that deeper aquifer? Leaves a void. Where does the water come from in order to fill that void? So my concern is that these packers are short-term solutions that over time, as we continue to pump from that deeper aquifer, which is what I consider to be the safe drinking water supply for the city of Santa Maria, is that we will eventually contaminate the lower aquifer. Here's a representative graph of two other wells in the city of Santa Maria, and you can see I've shown the nitrate maximum contaminant level. And what we've seen over time is that we've seen an increase in the nitrate, which suggests that nitrate continues to build up within the valley. And actually this year we decided that we needed another packer. Well 13 got a packer in October. Again, short-term solutions, but solutions nonetheless, at least for the time being. All right, during this time in 2012, the County of Santa Barbara received a planning grant through the Integrated Regional Water Management Plan to develop a salt nutrient working group to look at the fates of salts and nutrients within the city, within the Santa Maria Valley groundwater watershed. And we modeled fates and salts and nutrients and got together all the stakeholders, including water agencies, wastewater agencies, ag, regulatory. And it was wonderful to get this group together. And we basically put a black box around the watershed and what comes in and what goes out. And the conclusion was that once the city started taking state water in the 1990s, the salts ended up being relatively balanced. However, the nitrate levels started to increase in the 1980s and continue to increase. They're not balanced. And if you're interested in reading this report, there's a link to it. And I understand you have the website to the GMA Park biofilter. You can find this report at that link. So it's often wonderful to get a bunch of water geeky people together in a room, which is what that working group was, because then we start talking about, okay, so if we know that nitrates are increasing, what are some of the ways in which we can address this? And I already talked to you about the super expensive $64 million solution, which is in the bottom left corner, which is wellhead treatment. Or you can go with activated sludge with an anoxic zone at a wastewater treatment plant. Again, tens of millions of dollars because it's lots of concrete. Or you can do with something like a wetlands or a plant uptake. But those aren't that expensive, but it does take incredible amounts of land, and land on the Central Coast, not super cheap. But while we were looking at potential solutions, all of a sudden people started talking about wood chip biofilters and started putting them like on the Midwest at farms. And so the concept of a wood chip biofilter is use bacteria in order to convert nitrate back to nitrogen gas and return it to the atmosphere. The thing that you need most in order to accomplish that is you need a carbon source and a substrate. So the carbon source and the substrate can both be provided with the wood chips. And so we could essentially provide an environment that was conducive to removing the nitrate from the groundwater or from the water. Now, in order to do this, we would have to figure out where in the world we would put something like that. The city of Santa Maria is somewhat interesting in that it has the river that flanks the northern boundary of it. And there are really only four places in the city where water leaves the city and goes into the river, which really does suggest that a regional solution at one of those four locations might be a good way to do a real economic of scales project and remove nitrate from ag tailwater. And so there was some talk about, well, maybe what we do is we put it at the end of one of those drainage channels, get a lot of land that could drain into it, and then it'd be a way to pull nitrate out of ag tailwater. But because biofilters are living things, what if there's no water coming down the channel? Maybe we could have some supplemental water, and it turns out at that location there was already a well dug, and so we could use that as supplemental water. In addition, at the end of the Bradley Channel, which is the site we were looking at, there is a park, Jim May Park, and it's public land. And it's like, okay, well, if we can put this thing on public land where we could get water from a lot of places and supplement it, maybe we could find a potential way of addressing this issue. To help support the decision, we took data that the Regional Water Quality Control Board put together from the TMDL project to show that there's a lot of nitrate coming down Bradley Channel. In fact, they show numbers just over to twice the municipal water supply. Now, I'm going to tell you, halfway through my presentation, I'm switching from 45 milligrams per liter as nitrate to 10 milligrams per liter as nitrogen. Mostly because they switched halfway through my project. So from here on out, I'm going to talk about the nitrate MCL being 10, not 45. But you can see that there's an awful lot of nitrate coming down Bradley Channel. means put something at the end of it, we could pull a lot of nitrate out. Right, well, it's always fun to talk about ideas, you know. Put a lot of engineers in the room. We can talk about a lot of ideas. But there was no money for this. One of the people in the room was Peter Mertens, who's a staff member here at the regional board, who said, you know, the Kachuma Resources Conservation District got a grant of $1.25 million, but they're talking about returning it to the state because they're having trouble using it. It's a grant from the Irrigation Nutrient Management Grant, Prop 84. And he says, I wonder if we could get that money transferred and we could proceed with the project along that line. And sure enough, managed to make that happen. And I'm just going to put an interesting point here in that the city was not originally eligible for this grant. So I thought that was kind of an interesting point. But it got transferred to us, and so we were able to proceed with it. In January of 2013, put together a feasibility study to show that not only do we now have money, but yes, feasibility study says that this can work. And we needed to get Santa Barbara County on board, number one, because Bradley Channel belongs to them, and we'd have to cut into it. And number two, the land that Jimmy Park is on actually belongs to the county as well. So, you know, talking to the county, and they supported this project as well. Now we got ourselves a construction project. This is Michael K. Nunley and Associates, and they did the design of this project. Meanwhile, the California legislature recognizes that nitrate in groundwater is becoming a problem throughout the state of California, and they asked an expert panel to put together a document, which is the same one that Dr. Kahn brought up, which provided the conclusion that you need to pump and fertilize, or in our case, pump and treat the water from the shallow aquifer. But interestingly enough, as we're going through this, there were some interesting ag order contradictions. And one of them is, okay, so we now put something at the end of a drainage channel to take ag tailwater. But the ag order says that if your nitrate exceeds the drinking water MCL, you're not allowed to have it leave your property. Okay, well, I'm going to go with the Field of Dreams concept, and that is if I build it, maybe we can address that, but it was interesting to watch as we're looking at trying to get the nitrate out. We've got this interesting development in that the ag order might be a little bit of an interesting issue. I gave a presentation on this project before it was built, and I had somebody come up to me and says, "You know, these don't work." I'm like, "What do you mean they don't work?" And it started making me realize, well, maybe it matters what kind of wood chips you use. And so we decided to run a quick pilot project and took three cheap sources of wood chips, one a lot of dead pine trees, one construction debris, and one being the pieces of compost that are too large to put in bags. We put them through a pilot filter to see what they would do. And their best result were the ones that came, you know, overs from compost. And so this graph, the numbers for the graph, 40 milligrams per liter of nitrate as nitrogen, so four times the drinking water limit. And we were able to consistently have results less than the drinking water limit. So what that does is that tells me that I've got a wood chip source that will be successful. Makes me feel better because now I've got this huge project and I want to make sure it works. And this gave me some indication that it would be successful. So these are pictures from the construction. You can see us digging into the channel. And I want to point out in the background, the upper right picture, there's a school in the background. The lower left picture, yeah, those are homes across the street. So this thing is smack dab in the middle of a community. And so we gave presentations to the school to make sure they were okay with this, you know, long construction project because we were in construction during the school year. And so we wanted to make sure they understood what was going on. Right, so this is the finished project. So I'm going to go through quickly the details here. You can see the hole in the channel. So what there's a little depression there in the channel, and so it lets water pool up. And the water goes through that hole, and it goes into a wet well. You know where the wet well is? Yep. So the water goes in the wet well, and then there's a pump in the pump house, pumps the water out of there, and then it goes along the sidewalk to, you see, four valve pot lids. The water, there's a manifold that take water through there, and then the water goes down a little over to the right. Then the water goes down or up this picture, and then around, there's a floating baffle in there, so it goes around and then out through a effluent weir, which is the little vault over there in the dark chips. And then it goes back into the channel where the riprap is. And then there's the supplemental well is located on the right-hand side of the screen. And so that's the well that feeds into this project when there's no water coming down the channel. Now the big question, does this thing work? I have a graph showing that. Okay, so what this graph shows the MCL, and it shows that when the nitrate exceeds the MCL, we can comfortably remove nitrate. But what you will see is there are an awful lot of data points where there's very little nitrate. Reason being is that over time, we built this thing for 200 gallons per minute of nitrate because the Central Coast Ambient Monitoring Program had indicated that that's the kind of water that comes down the channel. Yeah, until the ag order came about. And so there's a lot less water coming down that channel than there was when we designed this project. So that little well that was supposed to be the supplemental well is actually the major source of water. Now, when we started this project, it was during the drought, and that well had 7 milligrams per liter of nitrate in it. And then we started releasing water from Twitchell, and this well is influenced by the water coming down the river, and it now has no nitrate in it. So I am basically running water that has no nitrate to keep my big compost heap from spontaneously combusting, which means that what I've done is I have essentially created a carbon footprint for the city. I'm trying to decide, you know, is this better than sliced bread, or did I just build a liability for the city? But if you give me some nitrate, I'd be happy to take it out. So this is a big list of lessons learned. These things have been put in on farms, but to do something like trying to put in a facility that treats, we got 60 farms upstream of this, 60 farms, 5,000 acres. This was a regional project that serves as a great demonstration project to something that can be done, but I had nobody to model this after. We're making stuff up as we go along, and this is just one of probably 3 pages of lessons learned that we've had here. And I want to remind everybody that this was not a regulatory requirement by the city. There was no regulation that required us to do this. And yes, we got a $1.25 million grant, but we also put in $250,000 in numerous hours of staff time in order to bring this thing about and to try to make it work best.
Can you back up just a second?
Oh, I'm sorry. I put this up more as a demonstration of we've learned a lot as we've gone through, but I am happy to elaborate on any of these if you wish. Certainly. A part of the grant required that we do a bunch of outreach. We developed this really cool logo that if we build more biofilters, we're going to reuse that logo and just put different names at the top of it. Back then I was thinking, wow, we put one of these at every discharge to the river, and wow, we can remove a lot of nitrate. We put a website together. I highly recommend that everybody take a look at the website. It's got a ton of information on it. We have a beautiful bronze permanent sign you can see up there in the picture on the right. We offered free technical assistance to all the farmers upstream, and we put in a very large temporary construction sign so anybody who walked by would have information about what was going on. Right, remember I started with the integrated plan. I'm going to circle back around and talk about the integrated plan. And remind everybody, this was not a regulatory requirement, but kind of an example of a kind of project that you would see in the integrated plan approach. If we, step back and look very holistically at the city, our goal is to protect one of the city's greatest assets, which is a drinking water supply. And this is one of those ways in which we can take something that doesn't necessarily have to be a regulatory hammer, but that we can start trying to solve ways in which the city, can meet a goal that's common with the regional board, which is protection of water resources. So, and as I had described, the design conditions that we built this thing on no longer exist due to the developments in the ag order. And I thought it was wonderful to have Dr. Kahn give his presentation before mine, mostly because one of the things about the ag order that says don't release your water if it exceeds 10 milligrams per liter of nitrate. Well, if it doesn't leave the property, it just goes down. And where is down? Down is to the groundwater basin. And so, you know, I know what the ag order is trying to achieve, but I'm going to say in this case, it's probably not achieving that. And, you know, I can't just sit back and watch this happen. We had to do something to try to further our costs, our cause. So, you know, an intractable problem like nitrate in groundwater really does need creative solutions, and that's one of the beauties of the integrated plan, is it allows for holistic, creative sorts of solutions. But it definitely needs regulatory flexibility in order to be able to make a difference. So then the question is, okay, well, where do we go from now? You know, what do I do with this thing that's not getting the food that it's supposed to get? But we definitely have a common goal. The city wants to protect this groundwater basin, and I know the regional board is very interested in protecting water resources. But we definitely need some flexibility in order to maximize the potential benefits of this biofilter. And I will tell you that not only was I an intern here at the regional board many, many years ago, but I've also had the pleasure to work with many, many of the staff here at the regional board. And I will tell you that they are dedicated and they are committed. And you know, they feel very strongly about the words in the regulations. But if those words in those regulations are keeping us from being able to solve the problem, then we definitely need to talk about how maybe a little bit more flexibility might help us towards furthering our goals. And in addition, I really would like to further the concept of the integrated plan for a more holistic approach to water quality. I think that we could achieve much more if we look at things from a more holistic standpoint. I very much appreciate your time and attention, and I'm open to any questions.
Looking on my right, start with Mr. Johnston.
So what is the what's the potential throughput of this biofilter, let's say an acre feet a year?
I only know it in gallons per minute, and I'm really bad at doing math in my head. It was built for 200 gallons per minute.
Okay. I don't do math in my head.
I don't do math in my head. Okay, well, let's do this. Would that be? That'd be 28,000. Okay, we do 1 million a week. Yep, 43,560 cubic feet in an acre foot.
This is potentially the something like, if you do 1 million a week, this is somewhere in the range of like 100 plus acre feet a year, then it goes through it, potentially.
I don't trust my math in my head. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
I can whip out a calculator and do it for you.
Okay. I'm just trying to figure out how much. So what happens now, if you had nitrate coming down the channel, what would happen is it would be treated, and then it would go back into the channel and out to the river?
It would go back into the channel, and there are lakes. They're called, we call them the Jim A. Park Lakes. If you drive up Highway 101, the north end of Santa Maria, you see those lakes over to the right.
Mm-hmm.
And so the water would go into those, and then eventually when those lakes spill during storms, it would eventually make it to the river.
But outside of storm events, it would basically be percolating into that shallow groundwater?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the concept would be to take surface water, other than in storm events, take surface water, denitrify it, and have it percolate into the contaminated upper aquifer.
Yeah, but it doesn't start out as surface water. There is no source of surface water.
Right,
it would be groundwater.
Right.
It would be surface water once it's in the channel, yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And the reason that the water that you're pumping and putting in there, even though that upper aquifer is relatively contaminated, you're getting clean water because you're basically hydrologically connected to the river?
Correct. That supplemental well is right next to the river. It had nitrate in it until they started running, releasing water from Twitchell.
Uh-huh.
And when they started releasing water from Twitchell, the nitrate levels in the well right now match what's coming down Twitchell.
Okay.
Or down the river.
And I'm assuming that the problem from our board's perspective of allowing water to be transported from farms down the channel is an EPA, an environmental, a Clean Water Act problem of allowing water to be, or a Port of Cologne problem rather, of allowing water to be discharged into a waterway that's above the drinking water level. Is that right, John? I'm just curious.
I don't know the reasoning behind it in the ag order, so I can't tell you that to you off the top of my head.
But so this channel is, as through the city, I suppose it's a flood control channel, but outside of the city, it would be considered a waterway. What's connecting those farms to that channel? Is that correct?
I will tell you that I know that it is on the 303D list.
Okay, that would make it a waterway. All right, I get it.
Which is another interesting discussion, I believe, in that, okay, is this a waterway or is this a conduit to a treatment process?
This is a discussion we've had in the Salinas Valley as well, where there are treatment wetlands that discharge to things like the Salinas Reclamation Channel, the draw water from the Salinas Reclamation Channel, and if tile drains are discharging a few hundred yards upstream from the intake for the constructed wetland, it's a problem because they're discharging to a waterway. I get it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And to satisfy Mr. Johnson's question, is 322 acre feet a year.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And your number for the city's overall need was like 13,000, right? So that's a significant chunk. Okay, thank you.
Ms. Gray?
Thank you for coming, Shannon. I appreciate you actually getting this accomplished. The project was obviously a professional and a personal hurdle, and you got it across the finish line, so it's a testament to your spirit. And I think it's also a good little plug for IRWM, because we were all sitting at the same table when we were able to facilitate the funding of that project. So it sounds like we have a regulatory conundrum and then sort of a liability at this particular point for the city that we'd like to turn into an asset. And I don't obviously know all the particulars of the regulatory aspects and the Port of Cologne that is intersecting here, but is there a way that we can research this at the staff level to see if we can introduce some sort of flexibility, not only for this project and sounds like for the larger issue with the integrated plan as well?
So I think there are options actually that were built into the ag order. We didn't envision municipalities taking those options. We envisioned collectivist farmer groups and sub-watersheds taking those opportunities. But that might be, we collectively internally need to do a little more research on this. But I think that actually might be an avenue. There's similar things going on in the, I want to say Blanco Drain, right, Harvey? Yeah, and Pure Water Monterey. Mm-hmm. So we're starting this thing that we left a placeholder for 5 years ago in 2.0. We're starting to see a couple projects creep in now. They weren't exactly what staff envisioned 5 years ago, but that doesn't really matter.
Right, I think we have a good opportunity here. I mean, we have a willing participant and a project that is just, ready to receive some water and
right. Stay focused on the goal.
Yeah, protecting those resources.
Right.
Thank you,
Dr. Hunter. And I do have one speaker card. Okay. Nope. All right. So, you know, the wood chip project, have you had an opportunity to visit or at least communicate with some of the other wood chip projects that we have not far from you? There is one near the state park, and then we have the other one in Los Osos Valley Road here in San Luis Obispo.
I visited both of them. Katie McNeil, who's the grant manager, has kept me in the loop with those other projects.
And, you know, some of the things VRCD has learned also is the quality of a wood chip. And in one of the projects, what has been used is recycled pallets, where the nails have been removed with a magnet, you know, and it goes through a chipper. And those have been found to have a bit of a longer life expectancy because the good news with bioreactor, when they work, it's fantastic, but then, you know, at some time and point, you have exhausted the benefit of the wood chip. The other issues that the RCD has found is to keep good activation is you gotta move it. You can't just put the, as you know, you can't put the wood chip in there and walk away and say, okay, we're done. So you gotta constantly move it around. And, you know, the project in Los Osos, just from, you know, a little technical interest, is that the pumping of the water is done with a windmill.
Yes.
So that's actually zero electricity be used in the footprint. But yeah, very interesting project. And I certainly agree with board member Jane Gray that, you know, this is an area where perhaps we need to look at what can we do, because I always like to remind ourselves that we, you know, we are always being labeled regulators, but I think we need to also recognize there's another label which is called facilitators. And, you know, that's a perfect application here of being facilitators, using our, you know, intimate knowledge of some of the regulations and see how we can help. So your presentation is actually daylighting, you know, an issue that personally I was not aware of. I was aware of a project, but I was not aware of a bit of the impasse you're in. So thank you for that. And also, congratulations on your high level of energy and enthusiasm that you definitely display in your presentation.
Thank you.
So if we, Ms. Harvey, any parting comment, since this was part of your agenda?
Yeah, thank you. Just thanks to Shannon also. And we've already had some discussions about what John alluded to with some options for finding a source. Did a little bit of mapping already about groundwater numbers in that area upstream of the biofilter, so we're looking at it.
All right, perfect. So if we do not have any further comment, this close this item 17, which was the last item of the day. So I will then officially close this meeting of Friday, December 8th, 2017. It is 1 o'clock, so Ms. Olson, 1 o'clock means, okay, thank you. And I'd like to take this opportunity, don't go away yet, none of you. I'd like to take this opportunity to wish each and every one of you a great holiday season, and our next meeting will be next year, but again, my best to all of you. And that goes for the public, our staff, and also special thanks to staff for a little celebratory activities of yesterday. So thank you.
Likewise, I'd like to thank the board and the staff and the stakeholders and wish everybody happy holidays, and we'll see you in February maybe.
Yes, thank you.